Welcome back to After the Buzzer. I'm Gordy Jones, and joining me from Gross Estates in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, is that Mike Gross. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Gordy. How are you?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm great.
Good. And on the line, we have one of my former cohorts from the Eagles beat back in the day. He is Mark Eckel. He now works for Packer Report and the Packaday podcast. He joins us from Myrtle Beach, where he is happily retired. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Gordy.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. So we wanted to get your thoughts about the Super Bowl. I mean, the simplistic view is obviously how are the Bengals, who gave up 9 sacks in a playoff game, going to block Aaron Donald? But I'm obviously no game is that simple. So what do you see as the 2 or 3 keys to the game?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm done doubting the Bengals because I thought they'd beat the Raiders. And the wild card weekend, I thought they were better than the Raiders. I didn't think the Raiders were that good, to be honest with you. But I didn't think they. I thought when they played Tennessee that okay, they won their first playoff game in 31 years. They're happy. They're not going to beat the number one seed, and they had never won a road playoff game. So
right.
I didn't think they'd beat. I didn't think they'd beat the top seed Titans. But they did. Even though they gave up the 9 sacks, they found a way to win. Then they played Kansas City again on the road. You know, Kansas City, a team that's been there, the quarterback's been there, the coach has been there. And no, they're not. This young team, Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow, they've gone. This is a great year. They can lose to Kansas City, and it's still a great year. And this team isn't going away. I mean, they're a good young team. So I'm thinking, all right, but they beat Kansas City.
Right.
So I'm done saying that the Bengals are happy to be here. I'm done with that notion because. Obviously, they don't know that they're not supposed to be here. So, I kind of like them with the points. I think I haven't decided exactly what I'm going to do yet, but I'm probably going to throw a couple dollars on the Bengals plus the 4 or 4.5, depending what it is.
Yeah, that's pretty generous. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we've seen teams like this get on a roll. I mean, most recently, the Eagles a couple years ago when they beat the Patriots. I mean, they had a ton of injuries. And they still kind of, you know, found a way every week. So there is something to be said for that mindset, just kind of figuring it out and riding the wave.
And you know, you know who Zach Taylor is, right, Gordy?
Only peripherally.
Well, you know who his father-in-law is?
No.
Mike Sherman.
I did not.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's Mike. He married Mike Sherman's daughter.
Okay.
There's a great quote from a rare but great quote from Mike Sherman when the Bengals hired Taylor, saying they didn't have to vet him. I already did that.
That's not bad.
That's a relief. Mark, last year, I thought the problems with the Chiefs' offensive line were really decisive in the Super Bowl. So I'm leery about picking a team with a bad offensive line. But do the Bengals really have a bad offensive line, or was that an aberration? Yeah, that 9 sack.
They're not that bad. They're not. I mean, they're. It's probably the weakest part of their team, and probably I'm be willing to bet that this offseason they sign and or draft an offensive lineman. Right. So obviously they're big, and they have a little bit of money too to spend. So, you don't want Joe Burrow taking those hits like that. So, I don't think they're bad. I don't think they're 9 sack bad, but they're not. It's not their strength. Let's put that. There's a lot of teams that aren't playing Sunday with better offensive lines than the Cincinnati Bengals. But I mean, Burrow and Chase and Higgins and Boyd and Mixon. They got some talent on that offense now. They can make up for, you know,
their skills are.
I mean, they got some people.
And the other thing is, although he got sacked in that game 9 times, they also hit a lot of home runs in that game with their offense, with that group that you just mentioned, right? I mean,
right.
You do that.
You know, yeah, I mean, they're, like I said, this Bengal team, they came, I mean, it shows you what the NFL has become. I mean, 2 years ago, they were the worst team in football, right? They had the first pick of the draft. Last year, they were one of the bottom 5, and here they are now sitting in the Super Bowl. So it doesn't, you know, it used to be that never happened. You never went from missing. advancing the playoffs to the Super Bowl. You had to do it, you know, the way the Packers did it back in Mike Holmgren's day, when they made the playoffs, won a wild card game, then went a little further, and won a Super Bowl. Or the way the Eagles did it, Gordy, when you and I, you talk about when we covered Eagles together under Andy Reid, you know, made the playoffs, won a game, lost in the second round, got to the NFC, and then they kept getting to the NFC game and losing, and then they probably got to a Super Bowl. Now, they didn't win it, but in that stretch. But you saw a progression each year, you know?
Yeah.
The Bengals, you know, this doesn't happen. This never used to happen, where you go from the worst team in the league to still, when they were 4-11-1 last year, to the Super Bowl. That's that's an amazing, and they, you know, give all the credit to, you know, the coaching staff, the, and you know, Burrow obviously gets a lot of it, but he's not by himself. They have some pretty good players on that team, and they all just came together. And like I said, they don't know that they're not supposed to be there.
I can't believe how low profile the coach is, despite his Mike Sherman ties. You don't hear anybody talking about him. You don't hear anybody, hey, young genius coming up like you normally would. What's up with that?
I think it's Cincinnati. I think it's just a whole Cincinnati thing. I mean, smaller market compared to, you know, Philly, New York, L.A., wherever, Dallas, whatever. I guess he is just a low key kind of guy. I mean, like you said, like you would think the world would know that his father-in-law was a former NFL head coach. I mean, if he's coaching in, if he's the Rams coach, everybody's talking about that. Sherman's doing TV appearances and all that kind of stuff, right? I mean, there's, you know. And I tell you what, their defensive coordinator is very good. I mean, you saw what he did against Kansas City, right?
That is crazy what I didn't think anybody could do that to Kansas City.
Oh, they did.
He
did it twice, really, because he did it in the last game of the regular season, too, where they adjusted at halftime.
Right.
They kind of I have a thought as to what went on at both teams at halftime of that game. So Cincinnati's in there. And their coaches are saying, all right, we got to do this. We got to spy Mahomes, all right? We got to spy him. We got to put a spy. We got to drop more to coverage. We'll try to get some pressure, but we got to more in coverage. Make him do this. Keep him in the pocket. Don't let him do that. We got to cover it. And Andy was over in Kansas City's locker room saying, Eric, did you order the pizza? I ordered kids. Sausage and pepperoni. Good job, Eric. That's why you're going to go spicy. And Spags, what do you want? You want Spags? What's that? Pepperoni. Okay, Spags, you got the pepperoni.
It was here that we should add a footnote that Andy Reid is not your favorite person in the NFL.
No, he's not. and I wasn't his favorite writer in covering this year, so kind of the feeling is good. I always tell people Andy and I had a love-hate relationship, but without the love.
One of my favorite questions ever asked in a press conference was when they signed a fullback named Kyle Echol, and Ruben Frank asked Andy, how hard is it for you to say something nice about a guy named Echol?
I forget Andy's answer. I remember that happening. I don't remember Andy's answer.
Nor do I. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. So, if you're Jaquiski Tartt, are you watching this game, or are you still saying, I can't watch this after I dropped the interception that would have got us to the Super Bowl for San Francisco?
I don't think I mean, you could ask that about, you know, did Brian Bostic watch the 2014 Super Bowl? I couldn't. If that was me, I couldn't watch. I don't know him. I don't know what he's made of, but I know me. I'm too weak. I couldn't watch that game.
No, I mean, he did own it after the game, so good for him on that score. Oh, but geez, goodness gracious, that was right in his hands. I mean, it couldn't have been an easier interception, right down the middle of the field. It might as well have been a punt, you know?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, that's, yeah, but that's, there, is that the O-line, right? That's why he plays defense. So.
That's right. But it leads to my question about Stafford. What do you make of this guy? He's had some awful games this year. I mean, I think he's a good quarterback. I always thought he was a pretty good quarterback when he was in Detroit. But he's had games this year which are just inexplicable. What do you make of him?
Yeah, that's why I'm not as sold on the Rams as, you know, they're a good team. Don't get me wrong. They're probably all three phases of the game. They're probably, and they're there because of that. They're very good. They have great players on all three phases: offense, defense, and special teams. But yeah, Stafford. I mean, like you said, I'm kind of happy, to be honest with you. I'm kind of happy for him. You spend all those years with the Lions. I mean, he was a number one overall pick. By the way, this is the first, I believe it's only the second time in history that two number one overall picks are playing each other in the Super Bowl.
I did not know that. Interesting.
The other one was Cam Newton and Peyton Manning.
Interesting.
I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is only the second time. But, so, you know, Stafford was the number one overall pick out of Georgia. You know, he had a nice career in Detroit, made the playoffs once or twice, maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was Detroit, so he didn't, you know, he wasn't going to win a whole lot, obviously. But, yeah, he's the kind of guy, and he's been this way even in Detroit where, you know, he could look, like people would always say about him making these great cuts. He was always a good comeback guy, right? A good fourth quarter.
Right.
But the problem, the reason he had to come back a lot of the times in those games was because he put his team in a deficit by throwing a couple first half picks or making, I mean, he will throw picks.
Yeah.
He will. Like you said, he should have thrown a really costly one in the NFC Championship game. So, and the Bengals have some guys, and look at the Bengals did it to Tannehill, they did it to Mahomes. They will create turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be something to watch too. If Stafford throws them up there, they're gonna pick them off.
Yeah, I agree.
Now the sort of easy take on this is that the Rams' defense seems to be really coming together at the right time, and Aaron Donald is just an extraordinary special player, and they stop the run so well, and Cincinnati has a bad O-line, blah, blah, blah. That matchup is dramatically in the Rams' favor. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But again, we've seen other things. I mean, you know, everybody thought Kansas City's D-line was going to annihilate Cincinnati, and they were going to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, again, the Rams, when the Packers lost, I was doing this show I do in Washington called By the Book. It's basically a gambling show. And they put up the odds of the teams left and said, you know, who would you pick to win the Super Bowl now? And I said, at that point, I said the Rams. They were plus whatever at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They weren't the favorite. Kansas City was the favorite. I forget who. They might have been the third favorite at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I said the Rams. Because, again, like I said earlier, I think on paper, they have the most talent. There's not a glaring weakness on that Ram team, I don't think. I mean, I guess their running game's, I wouldn't call it weak. It's not strong. I mean, if you have to say what the weakest part of that team is, probably their running game. But it's not terrible. Mm-hmm. Akers is back. I mean, he's a little banged up still. But they do have that great defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do a lot of things well. So they should be the favorites. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I can't say anymore that the Bengals have reached their peak because they keep going above and beyond. So
yes,
I think it's gonna be a good game. I really do. I'm looking forward to it. It's two likable teams.
Yeah.
That's rare. Two likable teams. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think nobody hates the Bengals, right? I mean,
no,
you can't.
No.
And the Rams are,
true. There's not a lot of hate here.
Yeah. The Rams, I guess the only guy on the Rams that you might not like is Odell.
Yeah.
Kind of weird. But, I mean, you know, Stafford's pretty likable. Sean McVay seems like a good guy. He was very successful. I mean, Cooper Kupp. How do you not like him?
Man, he is a beast. It's funny with Odell Beckham. He seems to get grouped in with the diva wide receiver class. And I think he's just weird. I don't think he's really a problem. I think he's just weird.
He's very weird. He just he beats to his. I mean, he don't just beat to his own drummer. It's you know, there's not even a drummer in the room that he's beating. He's just a strange man. But yeah, he's not a bad. I mean, he's not a criminal type by any means. You know, he has no police records that I know of. I mean, I don't think there's anything, you know, quote unquote bad about him. It's just like you say, weird's a much better word.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I've heard some people say, I don't know if I buy this, in analyzing this game, is that the Bengals have one super elite wide receiver, and the Rams have two, and that's going to be a decisive difference.
T. Higgins is pretty good. I don't know if he's he's pretty good. They'll go to him. And Tyler Boyd's a pretty good three.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, Chase is, I mean, wow. I mean, for a rookie, I thought he'd be really good, but he's even better than I thought.
Yeah.
He's still intimidating. There's no doubt about that. But their skill position players as a group are really good. I think they're comparable, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think Mixon's better than any of the Rams running backs.
Yeah,
he's pretty good. He's pretty good. Well, what stands out to you about Cooper Kupp, speaking of Cooper Kupp?
It's hard to say. I mean, he's just, he came out of, Eastern Washington?
Let me look. That's right? A good question. Let me double check.
Eastern Washington. I mean, he's big. He gets open, that's for sure. Yeah, so he runs great routes.
You are
great hands.
Yeah.
Not a burner. I wouldn't call him a burner by today's standards, but he's deceptively fast. I mean, he's just a whole. I mean, to have a guy lead the league in receptions, yards, and touchdowns, that's Jerry Rice kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's
really good. And he's a football player. He looks like he likes to smack.
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing. He's a very good blocker.
Yeah,
and
he is.
Most of your great wide receivers, they don't get mixed. They don't want to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No, this guy will block for you too.
Yeah, I like that about him. I mean, the Bengals, they have some interesting guys in their secondary. Jesse Bates, the safety, is a real good player. Mike Hilton, the slot corner, is a pretty good player too. The old Steeler. So they do. I mean, they shouldn't be overwhelmed by this group. I wouldn't think.
Again. They, you know, Kansas City has a bunch of weapons.
Yeah.
And the first half, you saw it.
Yeah.
And then they came out with that new look. You know, they went out for the coverage. They made Patrick Mahomes look awful.
That was crazy. I was stunned by that. Just crazy. To the point, some people have suggested that Holmes must have gotten dinged at some point, that he got concussed. That was the suggestion.
I heard that theory, too. On some
yeah.
He would have had to get hit.
Yeah.
I kind of got in his head.
Yeah.
Screwed up at the end of it. Well, they both Andy and him both screwed up. Andy, they could have just kicked the field goal. They went for it and they threw the wood. That was an office pass. Maybe I can't remember a pass. I mean, what was he thinking?
Yeah.
You have to throw it in the end zone there. You just have to.
Yes.
Yeah. And he didn't get anything out of it. You know. I don't want to say, I was into the game with a couple of friends, mm-hmm. and they don't score there. And I'm like, I said, that could come back and help them. Man. My friend says, oh, yeah, final score will be 41-3 instead of 44-3 or something. And I'm like, nah, he never got stunned in the hands. And then, you know, I was maybe just hoping, because I certainly just didn't want Kansas City to win. but it did. I mean, I think that. Maybe it played in Mahomes. I don't know, because that second half was a different game. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the Bengals, like I said, Mahomes did not look like the same guy that played the first half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really an incredible momentum. It almost they got so full of themselves, like we can score whenever we want, so we'll just throw this possession away, you know.
That's what my friend was saying. That's like, so they didn't score here. They haven't stopped them yet. They're going to score 40 points. Like,
right.
They didn't score again. They scored three more the rest of the game, right?
That's crazy.
So, that was some game. I mean, I got to say, it's after the wild card games, There were some bad ones.
Oh.
But after that, I mean, from the second round and in both championship games,
right,
we've seen some really exciting football.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, I hope the Super Bowl, I hope it continues. I don't want to see a bad contest after all this.
Yeah.
We can't, a bad Super Bowl would kind of be like, oh, no, not after all these good games, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Buffalo City game, that was crazy. That was
insane.
So, if you're king for a day, Mark, what do you do about the overtime rule, especially in light of a game like that?
I play 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Just play 10 minutes. And if it's still tied, play another 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I was just in favor of that. I was always like, this is not a play. I like sudden death. I mean, it's, you know. But after that, at that one game kind of put it, because if you think about it, in any other sport you would have, I mean, in baseball, let's use baseball, right? I mean, if the game goes extra innings and you score in the top of the 10th,
right?
I don't get a chance to bat? No, of course not, right? So you probably, both teams should probably get the ball at least once, but I say just play a 10-minute, so if you get it and score and I get it and score, when we keep going, or, you know, whatever, just play 10 minutes, play another quarter. That would be my solution. I don't want the college rule. I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's fine for college. I don't want it in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly, that game in particular just brought it all into focus. I mean, we've seen a number of instances with our team over the years where number 12 doesn't get to handle the ball. And
yeah, a couple times, right? Arizona, both times against Arizona.
Seattle.
Well, that's not why they lost Seattle.
Yeah.
So that's why, and again, yes, the Bills, I would like to see the Bills get the ball, you know, but that's the Bills can't hang their hat on that. Say that's why we lost. They had 13 seconds to kill.
Oh.
Stop for 13 seconds and you win the game.
Or squib kick, for God's sake.
Yeah. I mean, that was a shame.
Yeah.
And I know that people say kick all you. They should have made him bring the kick back. Yeah, looking back, but still 13 seconds from the 25-yard line. Just play a little bit of defense,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, the most amazing part of that game to me, and I don't want to come down. Andy's a good coach, a very good coach, but to me, after covering him, and Gordy, you covered him a long time as well. He had all three time. He never has all.
I know.
He usually takes one just to go get something to eat. He had all three timeouts. I mean, how many times did we cover Eagles and like? He blew a time. He's going to need that timeout.
It seemed like every game. It seemed like every game they would take one in the first series of whichever half.
Yeah. You know, they wouldn't get the play-in on time or something. Or somebody was lined up wrong. Whatever. I mean, they always blew timeouts. Right now, three times. Like, he has all three timeouts. That can't be right.
Check the numbers. Well, speaking of someone who covered a 9 overtime college football.
Oh, game. That's right.
I'm not a big fan of the college overtime game.
Yes.
Oh, you covered that game, huh?
Yeah, the Penn State Illinois. Yeah.
That was one of the worst days of my working life. It took.
Yeah, I don't like the college ball. I don't. I just don't.
Okay.
I mean, I guess it's. I don't know. It's not what I think.
So I know you have to get out of here soon. So I need to ask you, who's Aaron Rodgers playing for next year?
I mean, it's one of two teams.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. It's Green Bay or Denver,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't see anywhere else. We may know by the end of the night. There's one rumor that he'll probably win the MVP tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that he might make. You know him. He likes this. He's not afraid of making. He likes the stage, right?
Yeah, he does.
He kind of promised Pat McAfee he would not say it on his show. But there's some people think he might make an announcement tonight when he accepts the award.
That's crazy.
So, but see, here's let me ask you, Gordy. I have my own theory or my own opinion on this, and I'm not saying I don't want him back.
Right.
Because he's a great player.
Yeah.
One of the greatest, right?
Yeah.
But you saw Brady leave New England,
mm-hmm.
and the Patriots got nothing.
Right.
And he goes to Tampa with the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Manning left the Colts,
mm-hmm.
went to Denver. What is the Colts got nothing.
Right.
If I can get whatever, three for, you know, if the rumored, you know, offers are somewhat accurate, and Denver's willing to give up, you know, a first and a second this year, and a first and a second next year, and Jerry Jeudy and another player, the guy's going to be 39.
Yeah.
That's a lot of assets. I mean, he's not – it's only a matter of time before he's not the Green Bay Packers quarterback, whether it's this year, next year, the year after. I mean, just because Tom Brady played till 45 doesn't mean everybody can.
Right, yeah.
Right? Brady won 7 Super Bowls, too, and nobody else – you know, it's going to be a day when Aaron Rodgers isn't playing for Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
So why not get a bunch of picks and a couple good players – and go from there. I mean, so if next year isn't as good, okay. But the next 5 years might be real good because you got, if you draft well, and so far
they've drafted
this,
well.
This front office has shown they, at least in the first round, they do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I wouldn't be real upset as a Packer fan and now person that writes about the Packers. I would not be like heartbroken if they made a trade with the Broncos and got a bunch of stuff. And I was still, and I'm one of the people that someone asked us, would you root for him? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I want Denver to win the AFC. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
I certainly root for him to win the West. I mean, I have no allegiance to anybody. And yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm.
I think you see, I don't wish, you know, I'm not one of the people that, I hope they go 3. Well, be honest, since the Packers have their picks, I probably wouldn't want to do so well.
That's right.
But I mean, Aaron Rodgers, and there are people like, they're mad at him for this, that, and the other. No, I mean, the guy's a great quarterback. He's had a great career with the Packers. He had tough, you know, think Favre certainly wasn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
Favre didn't really help him.
No.
So if they bring him back, I'm okay, but I'm not going to be one of those fans that are all torn up about the fact that he's gone. And I don't see any other team. I mean, any team needs to go, they took Tampa Bay. No, the Packers aren't going to trade him to Tampa Bay. They're not going to trade him to San Francisco.
No.
They could have traded him to San Francisco last year and got the third pick in the draft this month, so,
mm-hmm.
which would have been real interesting. But, Denver makes all the sense in the world. They need a quarterback. They just hired Nathaniel Hackett, who was the Packers' offense coordinator, and a guy that's apparently very, very close to Rodgers. Then they just signed another. How about this? They hired an old guy. I don't even know. I barely but he caught Rodgers' first ever NFL touchdown pass in a preseason game.
Really?
Yeah. If Denver signs Jay Kummerow, all bets are off. He's going there.
Well, Mark, I know a lot of Packers fans, and you are a relative voice of reason.
No, the fans hate it now, are they the ones I'm talking about? That?
I resemble that remark, Mark.
are they don't want to trade him, or they don't want to?
I mean, here's how I look at it. I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think it's kind of it can be a no-lose situation. Either he comes back and he plays great again, or you know, you get a king's ransom. And either way, I think it can be a no-lose situation.
That's what I'm looking at it, right? I mean, he could be Herschel Walker.
Right.
He could be the modern-day Herschel Walker, where, you know, Dallas traded Herschel Walker, who was in his prime, you know, great running back. Back when running backs were actually important,
mm-hmm.
And they got all those picks, and look what they did.
Yeah.
They won 3 Super Bowls because of it.
Right.
They don't win. Dallas doesn't win. If Dallas hangs on to Herschel Walker,
right,
and doesn't make that trade, I'm not sure they win 1 Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, anything could happen. You don't know, but they're not a dynasty. They don't have all those good players that they got. You know.
Right.
So I mean, again, I'm looking at it more than I'm looking past the 2022 season. I'm looking, you know, 4 or 5 years. Yes, if the Packers trade Aaron Rodgers, they won't be as good in 2022 as they would if Aaron Rodgers comes back. But I think they'll be better in 2025 and 2026 with, again, assuming they make good picks with the picks that they get.
Right.
You know, the 9th pick in draft, if they do get Denver's pick, you could get a pretty darn good player at number 9.
One would think.
You know, I know this draft isn't, they're saying this isn't as good a draft as the past couple, but I'm pretty sure there's 9 good players.
Yeah, I would think. One would hope.
And if one of those bad quarterbacks go in the first 8, that drops another good player to you.
Yeah.
And they will. And one of them will. At least one of them will.
Yeah, because none of these quarterbacks are, I'll tell you right now, none of these quarterbacks are any good.
Mm-hmm. Not like that.
I am either, but you know how this people fall in love with.
Oh, yeah, the love is so funny. Yeah, and that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to talk special teams?
Do we have to?
No, this guy's good.
Yeah, I hope so.
They did good for once.
Yeah, he's just a year late, that's all.
There's that. Let me just, because I wrote this story, and Gordy, I think, when did you first start covering the Eagles on a regular basis?
2003.
Okay, so they were already good.
Yeah.
I remember Eagles special teams, I mean, from, I go way back, I mean, they weren't so good. Buddy Ryan's teams weren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Rhodes' special teams weren't very good. And then in 97,
mm-hmm.
they hit the bottom. They were bad. They were almost as the Packers' special teams this year.
Hard to believe.
They were bad.
Hard to believe.
They were ranked at the bottom of the league in almost everything, right? And then they hired Ray Rhodes. One of the last things he did as head coach, you got to give him credit for, he hires John Harbaugh to be a special teams coach. And that's why people say, well, he hired it, but they still need players. And I don't think the players were the Packers' problem. I mean, they had the Packers had pretty good depth.
Mm-hmm.
on the roster this year.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when you have good depth, you have good special teams. That's where special teams comes from, right?
Right.
So, and the Eagles didn't change up dramatically. They didn't add a bunch of players. They brought in Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell from that first time we interviewed him that, hey, this guy's a little different. This guy's pretty bright. He's pretty sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Special teams are probably going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They made 98, the Eagles were terrible. They were 3-13. Ray got fired. They had the second pick of the draft. They would have had the first pick, but the Browns were an expansion team.
Mm-hmm.
But special teams in 98, even with that terrible team, showed marked improvement. They actually looked it up. They increased their punt return average like a yard and a half.
Mm-hmm.
They increased their kickoff return average like 2 yards or more. Their coverage teams, they knocked off a yard or two on both coverage. They didn't have a punt or kick blocked all year.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like middle of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
And then by 2001, now Andy Reid comes in. I'm going to say something nice about Andy. Andy comes in, and he let Harbaugh do his thing.
Yes.
You know, he said, no, you're the special teams guy. He kept number one, which was smart.
Mm-hmm.
And then he let him have it. And like, Gordy, I guess you remember this, because they were still doing it in 03 and even after that. They would have special, like, days where it was just special teams practice.
Mm-hmm.
They would go the whole day. You know, McNabb got the day off, and, you know, running West, you know, or Deuce Daly, whoever were running back, they were off that day. Mm-hmm. But the special teams, it was just a special teams practice, both mm-hmm. during training camp and during the regular season. They would devote that much time
mm-hmm.
to special teams.
Mm-hmm.
And by 2001, they had the best special teams in the league. And it kept, from then on, they were always in the top 5 or 6. I mean, they weren't number one every year, but they were always one of the best.
Right.
And that just, you know, wasn't an influx. They went out and signed a bunch of players or they, you know, did that. No, they had a guy, they had a, and I remember talking to players about it back then and he said, like, it used to be, if you played special teams, it was because you weren't to play mm-hmm. offense or defense.
Right.
You were a backup tight end, a backup linebacker, a backup safety.
Mm-hmm.
And you were trying to win the starting job, and you didn't win it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, you go play special teams. So you're kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of pissed I didn't make that all. So I have to play special teams.
Mm-hmm.
But Harbaugh turned that around to like, no, you're my starting gunner. You're all starters.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting at this. You're starting at that. Gave him just a different attitude. Gave him a different.
Interesting. All
the little games they played, prize they won, different prize. I don't know. They had all kind of crazy stuff going on. But it just came from all attitude. It wasn't like a demoralizing. Mm-hmm. I hate to play special teams. It was, hey, I'm not a special team. We're the best on the team.
Yeah.
And then you had a guy like Ike Reese.
Right.
Who they grabbed, you know, who he was happy being the best special teams
player. Boy, was he good at it. He was really good at it, too.
He was so, yeah, I mean, you do need a player. I'm not saying you have to, but you have to have players with that mindset that, yeah, I don't have to start a linebacker. I'm the best special teams guy.
That's good. Yeah. So yeah, it is a matter of organization, but also a matter of attitude. That's a really good point. You know, just how it worked. One day in training camp, for some reason, I was watching Sean Morey was their gunner, and they had two guys lined up over him. And just to watch the different ways he would defeat the two guys, try to hold them up, it was just fascinating just how many different ways there were. You know, like, I'm gonna fake like I'm going inside, and then I'm gonna go between you, or I'm gonna do this, or I'm gonna do that. It was really interesting to watch that.
And I'm sure a lot of that was, give him credit, but I'm sure a lot of that was Harbaugh's coaching and his schemes and his, you know, development of guys.
Right.
So I mean, coaching special teams isn't easy. I think it's. And John and I used to talk about this a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the hardest position. It's hard because you're coaching like offense and defense, you know, because you're good offense, you know, when you're on punt return, kick return, you're trying to gain yards. And then when you're covering, you're trying to stop yards.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and you have players from both sides of the ball on your unit. You have backup tight ends and receivers, and you have backup linebackers and safeties or whatever else. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think I'm surprised more special teams coaches don't become head coaches because of that.
That's a really important
episode. And look what a good head coach Harbaugh has become.
Yeah.
And same with this guy that the Packers just hired. Raiders should have kept him. He did a hell of a job with that team.
I thought so. Yeah.
They got them in the playoffs and drove everything they went through. Mm-hmm. I was shocked that they didn't bring him back.
Yeah.
I'm glad they did. I'm really glad they didn't. The Packers were able to get him.
At the risk of saying something else nice about Andy Reid, Mark, I think you hit on one of the things that makes him a good coach. He delegated. He let guys like John do their jobs. He let Jim Johnson have his own little fiefdom. And I think that's, you know, I hesitate to use the word genius and Andy Reid in the same sentence around you, but I think that is sort of his genius.
Well, yeah, I mean, he learned that from Mike Holmgren.
Yeah.
Holmgren let Fred Shermer run the defense. Mike didn't get involved with the defense. Fred, that's your defense. You do what you got to do. And probably was special. I don't forget. Was Nolan Cromwell was the Packers special teams coach back then? I think he was.
I forget.
They let him, you know. So he learned. You know, that's the way to do it. You don't want to be a meddler. You don't want to, you know, hire a good coach. Now, if not a bad coach, and you got to step in and do things. But, I'll give Andy a lot of credit. That first staff that he put together was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect for a young, inexperienced head coach. He hired two veteran, Rod Dauhauer on offense, had been a head coach before, had been around the league forever. Kim Johnson on defense, kept Harbaugh. He had guys like Ron Rivera and Leslie Frazier. Spagnuolo was like a low-level assistant at that point. Brad Childress. He kept Juan Castillo for offensive line. But where Andy's career with the Eagles went down was as those guys left.
Yes.
Instead of getting out and getting good replacements, he would promote from within, which is a nice loyal thing to do, but not always the best thing to do. And, you know, he wound up with Juan Castillo as a defensive coordinator, for God's sake. And it was bad. I mean, after Harbaugh left, they went to a different special teams coach like every year, it seemed.
Yes.
You know, that wasn't good. And then, so yeah, I mean, I don't know if that was his Andy thinking he could do whatever he wanted at that point, instead of being the guy that got there and said, hey, I need to have good coaches. But yeah, I mean, people don't understand how important your assistant coaching staffs are sometimes. I mean, the head coach can only do so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Mark, we've taken up too much of your time, so we really appreciate your time, and hopefully we can talk again sometime. And
we'll talk again next year, maybe, and we'll talk about the Packers in the Super Bowl.
No, I'm telling you, as I mentioned on Twitter, we have to have all the Packers fans on our podcast at once so that we can share our angst.
Let me know what that one.
Mike's really looking forward to that one.
All right, guys.
All right.
Take care. Thanks.
All right, all right. Be well.
All right.
So, Mike, Mark Eckel, always a joy to have him on.
Yeah, I love him. He's got a good feel for it.
Yeah, he was always one of the many reasons it was fun to cover the Eagles, because he would always. As I think I've told you before, one day at training camp, I asked him how long he'd been covering the Eagles, and he said, well, since 1985. And I said to him, that's a lot of bad football. And he looked at me and goes, that's a lot of bad writing. So he is a one-of-a-kind character. So anyway, big news today. The Sixers finally pulled the trigger on the Ben Simmons trade. They traded him to Brooklyn for James Harden and Paul Millsap, and also going to Brooklyn were Seth Curry and Andre Drummond, as well as two first-round picks. Mike, your reaction?
I'm mildly, it's a slight thumbs up, let's say.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm glad to see Embiid have an opportunity to win now, and I think this increases that a little bit. I wish they would have done a little bit better in terms of what they had to give up.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you will about Andre Drummond, but I fear that in his absence, we could have this issue that we had a couple years
ago. Yes,
yes. When Embiid is not on the floor, they're a disaster at the center position.
Yes, I agree. I think that's a great point. And that really bit him in that series against Toronto when they were literally...
Oh, yeah, killed him. And also... Curry is a guy who can score and who can make plays and do some point guard things. He maybe isn't a classical, he's no Chris Paul, but I think they're going to miss that too. So it's a mixed blessing, but I think overall it is a blessing.
I mean, people said this today. They had to take a swing because they weren't going to win it as they were constructed. So this is obviously a short-term thing. I mean, Harden turns 33 in August. And he doesn't seem like a guy who's necessarily committed to the whole conditioning end of it. So they probably had to take a swing now, and let's see if we can do this in these next 2 years. And if not, well, that's just the way it goes. But, I mean, that's sort of how the NBA is for everyone. You know, you have those small windows. I mean, even the Warriors, they had a five-year window. Maybe they extend that now or restart it or however you want to look at it. But It is a league of small windows. Would you agree with that?
I do. No, and increasingly so.
Mm-hmm.
As we go along here, and what's interesting about it is, I suspect that Harden thought, well, it's just not going to happen the way we're set up here in Brooklyn, even with the talent they had there, with the incredible talent they had there, and Kyrie Irving being such a pain in the ass, may have had I think he was ready for something else and was certainly going to walk at the end of the year anyway,
right?
Which makes me think that maybe the Sixers could have done a little better. But maybe I'm being unrealistic.
One of the iterations of the trade that I liked better than what they ultimately ended up with had Patty Mills coming to the Sixers instead of Paul Millsap, and I really kind of like that better, because first of all, I think Patty Mills he's got much more left in the tank than Paul Millsap. And B, he's a really reliable outside shooter. I mean, he had a bunch of great years with San Antonio on some really good teams. I think he would have been a much better fit than Millsap will be, for sure.
Yeah, I would agree. Just because I think Millsap he's near the end of the road,
I think so.
Yeah. And Mills, Mills is closer to the end than the beginning too, but he would replace a lot of what Curry did for them,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm guessing that the Sixers could be active in the buyout market. I mean, a couple of years ago, you'll recall that they got Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova, and those guys proved to be really valuable guys for them down the stretch.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking they're going to be looking for a ball handler or a rebounder or a backup center, and I'm thinking they should be able to find somebody that can help them, somebody that can fill in a blank, you know. I've got to think they're thinking in those terms.
Yeah, you tend to think of these trades as sort of big, hermetically sealed, you know, entities, and right. they're probably not done making changes. And also, don't forget about Shake Your Booty Milton coming back.
That's true. That's true. I mean, he's not a bad player. That is very true. So, I mean. And this probably helps him because he doesn't have to handle the ball as much, and I think he's much better off the ball than on it. But I think he's a pretty good player. So yeah, that
the other thing is I think the way they're set up now makes a little bit more sense for Danny Green's role to diminish a little bit, mm-hmm. which is probably a good thing. And I don't mean that to kill Danny Green, but I think he's lost a little bit of athleticism, and it's not the defensive player he once was. But he's gonna, you know, if they're gonna do anything, you could envision. I mean, there'll be playoff games where he'll come off the bench in three or four threes and be decisive, you know.
Yeah, I would think.
But play less now, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably a good thought. So it'll be interesting to see how the minutes get doled out when the games get more important. And I thought about Curry and Harden together, if they would have kept Curry, and it just, if it would have been, you know, he would have ended up just standing on the wing while Harden pounds the ball, which, you know, that was sort of what he did in Houston. Well, but maybe it wouldn't have been a good fit, but then maybe Maxey isn't a good fit next to Harden either, because
well, that's exactly what I was thinking. Now I will say this about Harden.
Yeah.
He changed his game when he got to Brooklyn, I thought.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I was not sure he was capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I mean, if you watch Brooklyn play, it was not him standing, him pounding the ball and four other guys watching him.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like that. I thought he made a good sort of reading of the lay of the land with what he was working with there in Brooklyn, and became a really good, more conventional point guard type player. And I think I'm pretty optimistic that he'll be able to do that with the Sixers.
Yeah, I think it'll be, and certainly with Embiid, you know, Embiid and Harden at the same time on the court, that could just be an explosive combination.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see that not working to both people's benefit and ultimately the team's benefit. But, you know, again, there are these little holes they need to fill now for sure, you know, and another ball handler, another rebound or something just to kind of flesh out the roster and flesh out the rotation for sure.
And the other thing that has to happen with Harden is he's got to sort of renew his commitment. He's got to be in shape, and he's got to play defense, which that was waiting in those areas kind of the same way that he was when he was trying to force his way out of Houston, I thought.
Yeah. I mean,
for the last couple of months.
If you're a Sixers fan, that's got to be one of your concerns. I mean, this guy's forced his way out of two teams in 2 years. So are we going to be sitting here next year at this time saying, oh, James Harden wants out, he's basically stopped playing, he's pretending he's hurt, blah, blah, blah? I wouldn't think so. I would think that, you know, you're playing against Joel Embiid is a very has a very salubrious effect on a player, but, you know, I don't know.
Also, I hope that he is, I mean, I don't think he's a dumb guy.
No.
And he's 32, and realistically, am I going to get a better chance to win it all than this?
I can't imagine.
Right here, probably not.
I can't imagine you would. I mean, he played with a lot of good players in Houston, but Embiid has got to be really close to the top of the list. He's certainly the best big he's ever played with.
Yeah, and you could see him thriving with that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty optimistic about how they will be able to fit together.
Yeah.
Those two will be able to fit together. And if it works, it could be pretty spectacular.
I think so too, yeah. So a date to keep in mind is March 10th. That's when Brooklyn visits Philadelphia. So I'm sure that'll be a very interesting reception for Ben Simmons.
Oh, yeah. Interesting is a diplomatic word for it.
Yeah. So we were tossing this around earlier today about just the teams that we feel have a chance to win it. And we came up with seven, Brooklyn and Philadelphia being two of them. The other two in the East are Miami and Milwaukee. Milwaukee made a kind of a sneaky good trade today when they got Serge Ibaka from the Clippers. Serge is not quite the player he was in his heyday, but he's still a pretty good player. And I think, you know, with Brook Lopez having been down most of the year with back surgery, I think Ibaka maybe really addresses a need for a backup big there. So I think that certainly helps Milwaukee in my estimation. And the three teams in the West, Phoenix, Golden State, and Memphis, that we kind of settled on. And to me, Phoenix is the favorite for this reason, for two reasons. A, they were there last year. They were up 2-0 in the finals, and they kind of ran out of guys. They had a bunch of guys hurt, didn't have enough bigs. Now their bench is really long, so they have the motivation, and they have a deeper talent pool than they had last year. To me, they're the favorites. They have the best record. I mean, am I being a little simplistic, or how do you feel about that, Mike?
No, I don't. I think they're the favorite too. I was listening to some podcast the other night. Guys were kind of talking themselves out of Phoenix, and I was thinking, I mean, if you look at all of those teams, it's pretty easy to look at a whole.
Yeah.
Here's what's wrong with that team. Here's what's wrong with. Here's what they don't have.
Right.
It's harder to do that with Phoenix than any other team.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
Coach. They have a center, they have a coach, they have a Hall of Fame point guard. They have so many good, solid basketball players in between those two things. And they defend, they can really score. They have a bench, as you mentioned. I just don't see a big weakness there. I think they're a very good basketball team. In fact, I think they're probably nationally a little under.
I would say. I would agree. I mean, Devin Booker is just, he's the great player that people seldom talk about. The guy is just, I mean, the other day they played the Sixers, won a real close game in Philly. And, of course, Matisse Thybulle was on Devin Booker, and he defended as well as he ever does. And yeah. Booker still had 35. The guy's a great player.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Thybulle did a nice job on him, and he got 35.
Yeah, that's how good this guy is. And, of course, Mikal Bridges, former Sixer, continues to get better every year, and it's still mind-boggling. I mean, okay, I get the argument. If they don't make the trade on draft day, Mikal Bridges to Phoenix for Zaire Smith and a number one, then they don't have Tobias Harris. Well, think of where we are right now. Would you rather have Mikal Bridges or Tobias Harris? I think the answer is pretty obvious in my mind. I mean, the guy plays both ends, and he keeps getting better. I mean, he did that throughout his career at Villanova. And he keeps doing it in the NBA. The guy's just a really good player and a perfect situation.
They ultimately turned that into Tobias Harris. Well, you don't know that they couldn't have turned another thing into another player. I mean, that's just the way
it
seems like that was as clear a mistake as they've made sort of in era starting with the process.
Yeah.
Maybe you would argue that Fultz would be, but yeah. I don't know. But that was clearly a mistake. Yeah.
I mean, and everybody said it. This it wasn't a second guess. Everybody said it in the moment. It's like, what are you doing? Why? I mean, this guy. I mean, you have more intel on this guy. This guy plays a half hour from your home arena. You could literally scout every one of his game on every one of his home games. What are you doing? And everybody knew he, you know, throughout his career at Villanova, like he was a defensive guy when he got there, and then he made himself into a an all around guy, and he was just. You could see the needle pointed up. I mean, what are you thinking?
Not a second guess. That was the first guess.
Yeah, that was. I think everybody made the first guess in the moment, and it certainly has proven out and then some. The guy is a really, really good player, very good NBA player, at both ends of the floor. So
I think it's favorite. I think it's a pretty clear favorite. I could see Milwaukee would be my coming out of the East.
Yeah.
We continually sort of forget about Giannis, I think.
Yeah. Actually. He's so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Drew Holiday obviously proved his worth in the playoffs last year. And Chris Middleton's a really nice player. Really nice. You know, that's an underrated big three in my estimation, you know?
Yeah. But I think Phoenix. I just think Phoenix is a better team. I think they're a little better. Maybe Giannis can just is so athletic and such a freak and such a warrior that he can push him over the top.
We'll see. That's true. I mean, it's interesting. Speaking of little moves that proved out to be effective, I mean, JaVale McGee is kind of derided as kind of a goofy, you know, Shaq and a fool guy. But, you know, Phoenix brought him in this year, and he's given them some valuable minutes, you know, when DeAndre Ayton was hurt and behind DeAndre Ayton. And they also made another little move. They, Bismack Biyombo, again, not a great player, but a big body, which is really what they lacked against Milwaukee last year when push came to shove, literally. In the finals, they needed more big bodies, and they just didn't have anybody they could trust. And now they do. Now they have plenty of them.
And I also think the big kid will be a year better. A year. I mean, I think he will have benefited.
Yeah.
From what he went through last year. Yeah.
Yeah. So. For sure. Yeah. The last game was probably his worst game of the finals. Game 7.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Game 6. So yeah, DeAndre Ayton. Yeah, that was not a good game for him, and he just seemed a little overwhelmed by the moment. So, I don't think that's going to be an issue. Here's the one X factor with Phoenix, and this is just a weird thing that's happened throughout Chris Paul's career. It seems more often than not he suffers a really debilitating injury in the playoffs. It happened to him when he was with the Clippers again and again. And I, you know, who knows why, just sort of freakish things like a broken wrist or a pulled hamstring, whatever. And you know, that seems like the one thing that can, you know, sidetrack
him. Yeah, that would really be a problem. I mean, they're not going to win if they don't have him.
No.
I think that you can flatly say that. I mean, they're not going to win if they don't have him. However, he does have this history, but it's really a relatively small sample size. It's not like it's happened 25 times. People act like, well, this can't be a coincidence. Yeah, it can.
I agree. It's a coincidence, but it's happened. It's happened like 4 times, I think. I don't have the list in front of me, but I think there's like 4 different injuries that kind of really threw them off. Like, I think the one year when he was with the Clippers or OKC? I think it was OKC. And they were up 3-1 and he got hurt. No, it was the Clippers. They're up 3-1 and he got hurt, and Golden State came back on him. So it's just weird stuff like that that's happened with them.
Yeah, I mean, really amazing. But can it be an absolute coincidence? Yes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. I agree. It's just one of those weird things that happens. So so the last thing, and this has really been a very troubling thing that both of us saw today on Twitter. Somebody circulated a video of a recent Cedar Crest McCaskey game where a McCaskey guy was leaving the court, an African-American kid, and somebody yelled the N-word out of the stands. And you've done some reporting on this today where you talked to McCaskey coach Freddie Ramos and Cedar Crest AD Rick Dissinger. I just wonder what you've uncovered in your reporting and what your thoughts are about this.
Yeah, this is going to be in tomorrow's paper, and it should be online soon after we're done here, I think.
Yeah.
Rick Dissinger said, you know, that they're investigating, and it was actually they can't tell much from the video about where the yelling came from.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of looking at some of the security cameras they have to try to look into this, see where people are reacting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you would like sort of turn around and look when somebody says that. That's where they are. As far as the investigation, that's where they are. Freddie Ramos, I was very taken with what he had to say on the phone to me a couple hours ago. He said that they deal with this on a regular basis.
Mm.
And he coach it. He has to think about his players' safety and coach them in terms of, here's what you're going to be facing when you're going into these gyms. And I thought that was it just made me sad to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that stood out to me on Twitter today was something Devon Pinkert, a former McCaskey player, now a coach at Lancaster Country Day, said in reaction to another comment. Somebody said, well, 99% of the people aren't like this. And Devon Pinker just scoffed at that and just said, no, you're not even close to being right. And this is something I think about. I mean, I covered the LL League from 1981 to 2003, and I can't say I ever heard anything like this, but it also could be one of those things where I'm just tied up in what I'm doing and I'm not hearing it, not aware of it. So I wonder if it's become a greater problem lately when things just, when there seem to be no rules, no sense of decorum, or if this has always been the case. So I don't know what to make of that, but it's troubling beyond words. That's the obvious thing for sure.
Couple things. If somebody, how many people, what's the ratio of people who are thinking it if one person is saying it?
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, but you got to wonder.
Right.
You got to wonder. Here's an interesting thing. When I found out about this and I was kind of messing around with this today,
mm-hmm.
I looked on newspapers.com and I to find I had covered a Columbia Lancaster Catholic game in 2008.
Okay.
This was the last time Columbia was really good before this current group.
Okay.
Mark Whistler coached them.
Right.
And they had this little really good team. And they played Lancaster Catholic, and it was a close game for a while. Columbia made a little run. The time out on the floor. The Columbia kids are chanting, "This is our house." As kids, you know, that's sort of a standard thing. You know, this is our house because they were playing at Columbia. And the Lancaster Catholic student section started chanting. Now, this is chanting. This is not one person. Food stamps.
Oh, dear.
Oh, can you imagine that?
Oh,
and
boy.
I wrote about it in the story, and then nobody really, I was like, am I missing this? Am I hearing this wrong? I wrote about it, and a couple of weeks later, I wrote a column in which I talked about, at that time, it was a thing where the student rooting sections were kind of like, they would get more wrapped up in battling each other than actually paying attention to the game.
Right.
I mean, there's some of that now, but it was sort of a rash of that at the time. So I wrote a column about it and mentioned this thing about food stamps. And apparently there had been, you know, they had an assembly in Lancaster Catholic and the kids were admonished and this can never happen again, blah, blah, blah. But it was funny how that sort of happened and everybody just moved on. I thought it was very, I was like, am I missing something here? Am I hearing this wrong? I wrote about it, didn't get a whole lot of reaction. So I wonder if this is a way that I hate to use this term white privilege because it's become so loaded.
Yeah.
But I wonder if this is a way that this sort of manifests itself.
No, no, no.
That white guys like us can just sort of traipse through the world and not notice this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was kind of shocked to hear that this happened all the time because I frankly have not heard that word.
No, no, but the fact that Freddie Ramos said that this is not uncommon, it's beyond troubling. And I don't know how you curtail that. I wish I did. I wish I had a magic bullet because
we're not going to solve this one, I'm afraid. But, you know, and one of the things that kind of a heartbreaking thing that he said was there's been times when these things get said, and there's adults that Freddie's saying, I know these adults heard it.
Mm-hmm.
They're sitting right there. They heard it, and they don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's adults in the stands or, you know, game official type people, game staff type people, and they don't do anything. And he was saying, think of what a good opportunity this is for us to all be allies.
Right.
You know?
Right.
For pick up and push this away, push this out the door into the parking lot, get it out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And instead it's silence, and that silence is empowering.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Nobody said anything, so I guess I could say this, you know?
Right. That's there's some quote that I can't do justice about that when evil thrives when good men, I forget the rest of it, good men ignore it, but yeah, that's your point is well taken, and it's just, the only thing I can hope is that the guilty party is, you know, given their just desserts in this case for sure. I mean, that's the least possible thing we can hope for in this case, because that there's no place for it. It just can't happen.
Yeah, and then the next step is that person gets their just desserts, and then maybe some awareness, and maybe people wake up to it a little bit. Because I mean, I'm surprised by this.
Yeah.
I didn't know that this was going on to this extent.
Right.
And it's, you know, maybe some awareness will lead to a little bit of improvement. We'll see.
We can hope. We can certainly hope.
Yep.
So on that note, I think we'll bid you adieu for another week. And I'm Gordy, that's Mike, and we'll see you down the road.
Yes, see you later.